So welcome back to Interviews About Change. This is a series where I sit down with different tarot readers and discuss why some people get stuck, why others don't, and how to get yourself unstuck. Lon Milo Duquette is going to introduce himself in a moment, but if you are just jumping in now to this series, you can find the rest on my blog at thehermitslamp.com and click Tarot Blog, or you can look me up on iTunes by searching The Hermit's Lamp, or Andrew McGregor, and you can subscribe to the audio portion of my regular blogging efforts that way. And now, on with Lon Milo Duquette. Why don't you give us a brief introduction for those people who don't know who you are?
Well, I'm Lon Milo Duquette, and I'm a 62-year-old ex-hippie. Well, I may still be a hippie as far as I know. And I'm a child of the 1960s as far as my spiritual adolescence goes. I was introduced to Eastern mysticism and psychedelics about at the same time. And along about the mid-1970s, I sort of moved my focus from Eastern mysticism to Western mysticism and Western magic and Kabbalah, and that brought me into contact with tarot and other Kabbalistically based systems, and I'm a student, I guess, of the works of Aleister Crowley, the infamous magician of the first part of the 20th century, and I'm actively involved in the magical society that he led for a great part of his life, Ordo Templi Orientis. And I write books. When I was 40 years old, I started writing books. And it's sort of been my passion. I've got about 14, 15 titles in print, and they're all sort of related to this magical, mystical exploration of human consciousness. I've been married for 43 years.
Well, that is also a good accomplishment.
That's my biggest magical triumph. Yeah.
So, you know, I'm familiar with your deck, and you know, in your deck, there's a lot of integration of magical symbols and magical workings. You know, and it really draws out a lot of this stuff where we get into Enochian and other kinds of magic. You know, how do you see the relationship between tarot and this sort of more, I don't know if we want to call it practical magic or exploratory magic, other beyond just the as a tool for reading?
Well, I think because the tarot is structured along very, very generic and universal Kabbalistic lines, that it's not so much that we can say that tarot in itself is specifically a magical tool, but it's just because it's so universally structured, it has something to do with everything. And I've just sort of peeled off the magical applications of tarot and have focused on that. But I'm sure tarot being so universal in its structure, you could apply tarot to gourmet cooking. You could apply tarot to, you know, bass fishing. You could apply it to most anything, and if you gave it enough attention, you'd certainly find it, the study, rewarding. But because I see tarot as sort of the pictorial expression of literally the DNA of the Kabbalah, it's very easy to see that other systems of spiritual exploration that that deal with the body and the mind and the spirit and the structure of the universe as the Kabbalists see it broken up. The tarot is just a natural. Four suits being the four basic elements of fire, water, air, and earth, with the fifth element, spirit, being injected into it through the aces and the 22 trumps, is just it's a flashcard system of studying the Kabbalah, and I was what led me to create my own deck wasn't so much the need in the world for a new tarot deck, but I just wanted to actually place information on the cards themselves that I would otherwise have to dig out of books, that I'd otherwise have to dig out of charts and graphs and everything. It's not like I innovated anything new to do what I did with my tarot of ceremonial magic. It's just that I tried to make it as easy on me as possible and put that information on the cards themselves, put the days of the year that the card represents, put the traditional spirits and angels associated with the particular decans of the zodiac that each of the small cards and court cards represent. And so I just did it because I was lazy, I guess. And I mean, it's hard enough to... this study is hard enough without having to make it extra hard for yourself. So I just invented the flashcards. And that, of course, includes a big, big practical section of Enochian magic as developed by the Golden Dawn. And so I just threw that information on there, too. You could, using any tarot deck, you could build your entire Enochian elemental magic apparatus using any tarot deck. You could learn the hierarchical structure of angels, archangels, spirits and intelligences of classic Kabbalah. So to me, tarot was just the most logical tool at hand to dissect this wonderful study.
So when you're reading for people, do you integrate that information into the readings, or is it... or is it just different applications of your work with the tarot?
Very seldom in a classic tarot reading do I dip into the thing and say, Spirit Andromalius here is giving you trouble. Or if the question really has something to do with technical aspects of magic, then yes. But in most tarot readings, when I read for most people, they have just regular questions of daily life that they're dealing with, and I read the cards using a combination of the classic divinatory meanings of the card, but they can be colored, especially with dates. Date parameters. Almost every reading has something to do with something that's happened in the past or that they want to have develop in the future. And the court cards and the small cards, or at least 12 of the court cards and 36 of the small cards, all represent periods of the year. Court cards, 30 degrees of one sign to 30 degrees of another, and the 36 small cards, 10 degree periods. So depending on what the question is and what the information is that they would like to see developed in the reading, the cards may indicate, well, this is likely to develop in one way or another sometime between December 31st and January 10th, you know. And so there's very practical time-sensitive information that the cards could be suggesting, even over and above their classic divinatory meaning of the card. Lots of times the cards will actually group themselves in a small constellation within the spread itself to indicate loud and clear that the cards are really talking about a date spread, and that the date spread itself is a piece of information that the querent should be conscious of. I don't know how many times, you know, I end up saying, if I were you, I would take a red pencil and circle this date or this date spread on the calendar in the same way that an astrologer might be aware of the time parameters surrounding certain transiting planets. So it can become extremely technically detailed if you're aware of it, and the cards actually showing the degrees of the zodiac and the dates involved make it pretty easy to be aware of it.
Well, it's the handiness of having the cheat sheet right on the cards, right?
There you go. You can just call it that. It's a cheat sheet.
Sure. Well, I mean, Crowley put it on the deck of Thoth, right? You know, there are the signs of the zodiac and the planets moving within them and all that. So, you know, it's right there if you know the symbols, if you're familiar with them to work with them.
Right.
So, when people come to you for readings, do you find that they're changing? I know you said you don't change your life or haven't had a lot of readings where you've changed your life based on the information from them. But do you find that people give you that feedback, that they're making changes according to the readings you're giving out to them?
Many times I get, follow-up communications back that would suggest that they've made certain changes in how they at least estimated that they were going to behave before the reading. But to tell you the truth, in all fairness to everybody involved, the motivation for somebody wanting a tarot reading, I found, is not so much that they want to learn how they can change, but they want affirmation that not changing is going to be okay. And that in itself is probably not a good reason for a tarot reading, but probably the most common reason and attitude for a tarot reading. And I don't, I don't really go out of my way to spin the cards to make them feel better about the reading and feel better about themselves. But I am consciously and continually aware that I'm not omniscient, and that my personal take, both intellectually and intuitively, is not, could not, and can never be the totality of the whole situation. And I try to be very frank in letting people know that truly what they're really after as expressed in the question, what they're really after will require a change. Okay, I use this example in when I talk about magic. A person may want to a person may be in love with the girl next door. Okay, Tina, the girl next door. I'm in love with Tina. Tina doesn't even know I'm alive. I want to do some magic. I want to evoke a spirit, to make Tina fall in love with me. Okay, so that's the thing is that Tina's got a will of her own. Okay, a magician doesn't. Really, the spirit that a magician whips up isn't like a hitman that you call up on the telephone and send out on an errand to make this girl, against her will, fall in love with you. That's not how it happens. The only thing that the magician has to work with is the magician. And the only thing that the magician can do with his magic is change the magician. And the reason the girl isn't in love with you, okay, is because right now you're not the kind of person that she falls in love with. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's your fault she hasn't fallen in love with you because you're not the kind of guy that she falls in love with. And when you evoke a spirit, this is why people say, oh, this kind of magic is so dangerous because, oh, it puts you on an adventure. It's dangerous. It upsets your life. Well, yes, it does. Okay. It does. It brings out the very worst in you so that you can fix it. It puts you on an adventure. Evoking a spirit will turn your life upside down. Yes, it will. But if you survive the adventure, it has turned you into the type of person that Tina falls in love with. Mm. It's like Indiana Jones is a different character at the end of the movie than he is at the beginning of the movie. His adventures, his dangers, his pain, his excitement, his trauma has turned him into a character, a deeper character, a character with more color, more depth, more romance. Now, the thing a magician needs to consider is the type of person Tina falls in love with. Maybe she can only fall in love with a one-armed man. Are you ready for that adventure? Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah. What are you getting yourself into, right?
What are you getting now? Yeah. So you really need to know: is it truly part of the big plan for your life that you and Tina get together? Because if it is, then you better be ready for the adventure of having Tina in your life. Mm-hmm. And. The same thing with a tarot reading. Even among people that are technical magicians and very mystically and spiritually minded and everything else, when it comes right down to a tarot reading, they want to know almost what everybody else wants to know. Does he or she love me? Can this relationship work?
Sure.
Will my job, will my career, advance my destiny? And when it comes right down to it, then the answer is always the same. And I truly believe that when you really know the question, when you really, really know what it is you want to know, then the answer is screaming at you from any observable phenomena. The answer, the tarot is a wonderful observable phenomena in that it's based on such beautiful perfection. But truthfully, you could flip a coin, you could open a book, flip on the television and just listen to the first two words that come out of the speaker. You could observe a bird or a bug, or when you know the question, the answer is screaming at you from everywhere.
It's getting into the question that's important, right?
Absolutely. And the only trick is to get out of your way just long enough to hear that answer.
Mm-hmm. Well, and hence Crowley in his book on yoga says, sit down, shut up, and get out. And, you know, it kind of applies yeah. to this as well, right? Even though he's talking about a different context.
No, but it applies. It applies perfectly. Mm-hmm.
So how about initiation then? Because, I mean, initiation is, is a process of change. I mean, it's certainly been my experience of it. And, you know, how does that fit into this big equation of things we're talking about here?
Well, the initiation is the beginning of a change. It's a conscious beginning of a change. The word initiate means to begin. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's not the end of a process. It's the beginning of a process, it's just like the moment when you really know the question in a divinatory process. Initiation is where you finally made the decision that you're going to change, and you're going to start changing right now, and you make it a formal declaration. Not only to your peers and your lodge brothers or your church fellows or your family, you're making it to the universe. And you're saying, it's a huge oath that you take that you are now ready to take the next step, whatever that step is. And that's big magic. That's really, really big magic. And you formally want to be initiated into a holy order of some kind. Okay. It truly doesn't matter if that holy order is a bunch of old men in aprons that had to gather once or twice a week to do arcane rituals just before they eat pie and coffee, or a real, real hardcore magical society where people are in black hooded robes and are doing wild rituals and pentagrams. It's almost just a matter of degree, no pun intended. The real magic is that you've made the decision that you're going to start something. You're going to turn yourself into something else, something better than you currently are, and you're going to start right now. That's what that's the magic of initiation, and that can be joining the Boy Scouts or joining the OTO or joining the Masons or joining the Golden Dawn. The magic doesn't come from the Boy Scouts or the Golden Dawn or the OTO. The magic comes from you. And almost everybody that I've ever talked to or I've had this discussion with, and that they're being very truthful with themselves, realize that everything that happens to them from that point forward wasn't really because of the magic or the words or the ritual that took place, but because they had come to that moment in their life It was the moment. It was the moment that was the pivotal motion, not the formal ceremony itself. Does that make sense?
It does. It's not the secret handshake. It's the moment where you have that realization in yourself that you are actually, and not just a conscious realization, but a deep realization. I know for me, whenever I was going to be up for another degree initiation, whenever I was moving forward to it, there was always a dream or a couple of dreams that I would have, and I'd be chatting about them with people who were already ahead of me on the curve, and they'd be like, yeah, I think you're ready. And I'd get into the initiation, and I'd be like, oh, there's a bit of the symbolism starting to creep through into my consciousness somewhere. That's that for me was always the sign that I was ready to take that next step on the journey. Not that I got to see it all, not that I knew everything that was going to come,
right,
but
right.
That my consciousness was getting ready to absorb and undertake the sequel to my previous initiations.
Absolutely, and you can see sort of the step-by-step format of initiation by what the sequence of events that you need to go through in order to get an initiation. First of all, you need to apply. Okay, then you need to be interrogated. Then you need to be tested. Okay, all of this is stuff that is happening to every individual in their incarnations or their sequence of initiations.
Mm-hmm.
It seems so mundane. Okay, I sent a letter in and I applied, to join the Masons. Okay, so I meet with somebody. I fill in my paperwork. I write out my check. I fill it in. I get some Masons to sponsor me. They send a couple guys out to the house a couple times. They talk with me. They talk to my wife. They ask me just a few questions, And then they vote on me. And I don't even know what's going on. They vote on me a couple times at lodge, and I pass. They discuss me, and I pass. Then I'm given a time to show up at lodge. And then I receive the initiation, and the initiation, of course, has its sequence of events. Most initiations, you go in sort of a helpless condition, and they're sort of classic landmarks of initiation. But when you think about life. Life is like that too, and every major change, or hey, every minor change, has the same sequence of events. You do ask, you are tested, you are interrogated, you are forced to self-examine. Okay, you're forced to look at yourself. You're forced to think about these questions, then somehow or other, the universe conspires to allow you to take that initiation. And those are things that you have no control over. No matter how good you are, if there's going to be a hurricane that day or a tornado or a huge earthquake, you're not going to take your initiation. Somehow or other, the universe conspires to allow you to live long enough to get in the car and drive down to the lodge that night and take that initiation. For people who are used to meditating over the details of their spiritual life, just the events leading up to a normal initiation ceremony into a normal lodge down the street is just completely full, rich, ripe with spiritual significance that has everything to do with the evolution of your soul. And all it takes is a little attention to what the heck is going on in your life.
Well, it seems like it's like that with readings too, you know? I mean, often readings I find end with people saying, you know, I knew all of that, but I hadn't quite put it together, or I didn't have that emphasis on it that I had. You know, it's that attention to being in that moment, to being present in ourselves and seeing everything that's going on. Which is very similar to the initiation process. We become even more so, at least from my experience, hyper aware of everything that's going on. All of the details stand out, and all of the details and inner conflicts that we have in ourselves come to the forefront. And it's a great forum, a great way to experience those and to really get a chance to look at them.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And I sort of see the parallels. You know, when a person voluntarily comes to you for a tarot reading, it's like they're voluntarily coming to you for initiation. And that's why every one of these readings is totally a unique event. And the best that I can do as a reader is the same thing that a good initiator needs to do, and that's literally stay out of the way of this person's initiation.
Hmm.
It's very, very presumptuous to think that, you know, as an initiatory officer, it's you that's giving this person initiation. Sorry, you're a good initiatory officer if you can just stay out of the way of this person's own initiation.
Yeah. It's not you that has the power. It's the order itself or the charter and even beyond that. Those are just gateways and symbols to open up those parts that are already present in the person receiving the initiation.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing with your job as a diviner or a tarot reader or an augur. The best thing you can do is to be an observer, be a faithful correspondent of what you observe, and then just stay out of the way.
So what thoughts, if any, do you have on people who get stuck in the initiatory process? You know, I mean, in my time in the OTO, I saw lots of people receive one or two or, you know, whatever number of degrees, and then just kind of seemed to get stopped at that point. And some people, it seemed like a very natural, oh yeah, you know, they got this far and they realized that this isn't their road. They need to go study yoga or who knows what, something else.
Mm-hmm.
But other
mm-hmm.
people seem to get stuck in this place where they're like, yeah, I'm going to go ahead. But they never move again on it. You know, they seem to just get stuck for years and years on end. What do you think's going on in those situations?
Well, I think every situation is unique in and of itself. I think a good initiatory organization is one that allows people to go only so far as they're ready to go.
Hmm.
And it's not that you know, there's astral governors placed on, this person's not ready to be among our august fellows. It's not that way. It's not that way at all. There's a perfect analogy to that in the Enochian magic of Dr. John Dee, where they have levels of human consciousness or spiritual being, however you want to look at it, broken up into 30 aethers or 30 heavens. And it's exactly the same as the Kabbalists, you know, 10 sephiroths on the tree of life. Kabbalists, you know, see 10 major divisions in consciousness, and the Enochians see the same thing, only they break it down into 30. And there's a little preparatory thing, and you recite an Enochian call, and that creates a vibratory environment where it's like taking a little stronger drug every time that takes you into a higher level of consciousness. Okay. Yeah. Look at it that way. And so you take the weakest drug and you go into just a level of consciousness that's just a little higher than the one that you're in right now. And most everybody gets into the 30th aether, and they see a nice vision, and it kind of makes sense. And then they do the call of the 29th aether, and they get in the 29th, and that's pretty easy too, and 28, 27, 26. And as you go further into these higher and higher realms of consciousness frequency, if you will, you're meeting more and more resistance until finally you get to a spot where your equipment, your personal electronic equipment, is not fine-tuned enough to get you in to tune in that next highest frequency. And it's not that you don't have the potential. It's not that you don't have the basic equipment to do that. It's just that your equipment isn't tuned good enough. It isn't organized good enough to now dial in that higher frequency. And then that becomes the limit of your current state of initiation. And there's something that you need to do now to fine-tune your equipment so that you can take that next step, that you can enter that next aether. And in the Enochian magic program, the hints to what you need to do to overcome that current obstacle is found in the details of the notes that you took of the last aether that you could successfully penetrate. So in other words, there was something that happened. There was a message that was given to you in the vision of the last aether that you could penetrate, that is trying to tell you what you need to do to tune your equipment up to take the next step. Well, that's the way it is with initiation too. People get to the point where they just naturally aren't penetrating the next aether, and the their life circumstances and the universe just seems to conspire to say, well, this is where I'm stopping. I'm just stopping here for a while. And it may be that they're missing something, that it's not only where the universe has stopped them, but it's also where perhaps their laziness has stopped them. You know, but that's their own personal demon to overcome, and it's not my business to presume to tell them what it is they need to do. Okay, every magician, you're your own magician. You know, you're responsible for your own magical career, and so. In particular, where the OTO is concerned, the OTO is really has three major degrees, and it's the hermit, the lover, and the man of earth. And most people that formally join the OTO have most of their work to do in that lowest Manaverse triad of degrees. Most people in the OTO are in that first section, and then there's a second major degree, and that's called the Lover's degree, and that deals with another magical formula. And not everybody is. I don't want to say ready as if they were unprepared, but there's not everybody that is their appropriate spiritual ordeal to go through.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, there's the hermit, and which brings us back to the title of your blog.
Mm-hmm.
There's the hermit degree, and the hermit is, frankly, in the OTO, I'm in the hermit triad. I've been in the OTO since 1975. This year-wise, that doesn't qualify me for being a hermit, but I am of the degree now. Where I'm a hermit, my job is totally different. My ordeals are totally different, and on a whole different level. Way back when I was a man of Earth, way back in 1975, I wouldn't even recognize the kind of magic that I'm now required by my own karma or life to lead. It's a totally different thing. It's kind of ironic too, because I'm probably one of the most visible public members of the OTO. Okay, but my magic in the OTO is the most private, personal, and completely. It's very difficult, to share. Well, what are you doing in the OTO now? Well, I'm a hermit,
I'm in my cave. Leave me alone.
I do hermit stuff, I may be very public, but I'm doing hermit stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you could apply that same, touchstone to any initiatory process, whether it's a formal organization or a private one-on-one guru chila relationship, or just your own private spiritual journey.
Well, it seems to me when you're talking about progressing through the ethers, that's really a universal truth. It seems to me that we can take that idea and we can apply it to our careers. We can apply it to our relationships. We can apply it to whatever process we're going through. When we get to this point where things start to stall or feel like they're not moving forward and we have further distance that we want to go, we need to go back and understand what it is that we've done, not done, need to do different, need to learn in order to open up new realms of experience to ourselves, right?
Right, absolutely.
And I find even in reading for people that sometimes people will come and they'll be like, yeah, you told me all that last time. I'm like, oh, well, I guess you need to hear it again. I don't remember the readings that I do for people that much, but,
right.
Where people come back and are in the same situation, it's a similar thing. Well, there's something there that you haven't integrated yet. There's something that you need to sort out if you're going to move ahead on that kind of stuff.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, is there anything else that you want to tell people? Is there any, advice or you got any guru sage advice to help people on their journeys in either in working with tarot or in pursuing initiations?
Just don't ignore the obvious. And I say that from my own inability to. Recognize the obvious when it's in my face. the more I'm a hermit, the less advice I have for people. But you know, and I'm not being facetious when I say don't ignore the obvious, because coming back to the old statement, when you know the question, the answer is screaming at you from everywhere. Well, the closer you get to the answer, the closer you get to the question, you know, the answer becomes more and more and more obvious. And sometimes the most secret, the most profound information and revelation is staring at you right this moment. And so if I'd give any advice, I'd say take a look at it.
Open your eyes. Look at what's in front of you. Well,
yeah.
That's fantastic. Great. Well, thank you very much for chatting with me today.
Well, you bet. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. Is your fan page on Facebook kind of your primary outlet now, or do you still have a website? Where should I point people?
The Facebook is the best.
Okay.
If they're on Facebook, and if they're not, I've got just a number of different sites and different things. I really encourage people to contact me directly at my email address and tell me what it is they're interested in, and I'll be happy to send them individual links to my various things. It'd take me a half hour to tell you all the addresses to all of the,
for sure,
the different websites and stuff. So my email, if I may give
please
it,
do, please do.
Is just Lon Milo, and treat that as one word, Lon Milo, LONMILO, at gmail.com.
Great. And I'll put a link in the body of the post as well, so people can pick it up there.
Very good. And if they are on Facebook, that's the ask my wife. I spend too much time on Facebook.
Fair enough. All right. Well, thank you very much, and I hope you have a fantastic day.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.